Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. What do denial, squash, and the human-animal bond have in common? Before I can answer that question, I want to talk briefly about the way we see. As I'm making this recording, as usual, I'm walking around in my house, hanging out more at the living room end of the house to stay away from Ollie, who's following me anyhow, in hopes of staying away from Ollie and Bibi, who tend to get very raucous and noisy when they start to play. And as I'm walking around the room, I see the whole room. Just as if you stop or look around you while you're listening to this, you'll see some sort of a setting too. And it will look quite solid and complete and continuous. But in reality, that's not the way we see. Or rather, that's not the way visual data comes into the brain. It comes into the brain in little short spurts, separated by periods of darkness. And then the brain connects the dots and creates what we see as a continuous image. Now, as if that weren't disconcerting enough relative to seeing as believing, the other thing that happens when visual data comes into the brain is that it doesn't go to some giant logical rational computer that analyzes it and says, hey, Myrne, this is what you're seeing. No. It takes a detour. As soon as it comes in the brain, it goes first to those parts of the brain that are associated with memory and emotion. And then it goes to the higher brain centers, and then we say, oh, that's what I'm seeing. So even though we think that seeing is believing, the reality is we do create our own realities. And that brings me to the squash. I've mentioned in passing in a recent blog that I added veggies and some fruits to my flower garden this year. The idea being to put food by, if you will, conserve energy and shape up, get healthy, or whatever. And I planted both squash and melon. And I dearly love melon, and I had heard that melon were very difficult to grow. But I thought, what the hey, I'll give it a chance. So I planted my seeds, and my melons just took off. And my squash did nothing. And I had so many melons that I'm thinking, what am I going to do with all these melons? I'm not going to can them. I can't eat them all, can't possibly eat them all. Plus, they were all supposed to be about the size of a softball, big enough for one person to eat, and they're much, much bigger. And they're bright orange. But I'm thinking, okay, what do I know from melons? And meanwhile, I've got a couple squash plants, and they've got little green sort of buttercuppy looking squash on them. So I spent months, literally months, watering and watching my melons grow and talking to friends about them and, you know, oh my God, what am I going to do with all these melons? And it was like melon, 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 melon. And then yesterday, I was, well, by the time this podcast goes up and I get it edited and everything, it'll probably be last week, when I was working outside in the yard, I looked at my melons and I said, shit, those aren't melons. Those are squash, you moron. And even then, I couldn't believe it. So I cut one off, a little one. I knew it wasn't ripe, whatever it was. Brought it in the house, cut it in half, and sure enough, inside, it looked just like an unripe squash would look. Little orange unripe squash. But I still, I still, you know, I was just so deep into that melon track. Must have been a very, very large circuit in my brain. And the melon track said, no, that's a melon. It can't be a squash. You've got melons. They're all melons. Remember, they've been melons. Melon, melon, melon. So after I brought it in and cut it and decided, yes, that's definitely a squash, Myrn, I scooped out the seeds, some of which are still green, and I threw it in the microwave and cooked it. And it came out, and damn, still looked like a squash. So I'm thinking, no, 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 no. So I said, I'm going to taste it. You know, it's green, but come on, it's not green. It's bright yellow, kind of like the way squash look. And if you poke a fork in it, the texture is very winter squashy too. But I did not want to give up. And so I tasted it. And sure enough, it tasted like you would expect a cooked, semi-raw, unripe squash to taste. And I got to admit, it wasn't that bad. Now, in that instant, after months of looking at what was obviously a squash as a melon, everything changed. Now, I've got lots of squash, enough to put by for the winter. And I've got these little green buttercup squashes, and I think where they came from is that I fertilized my garden with what are called castings from my worm farm. I'm not going to get into my worm farm right now because that would be too long. I'll talk about it sometime, but I do. I have a worm hotel, and they eat all my garbage, and they turn it into really neat compost, and I put that in my garden, but they don't eat seeds. And so that's where I think those squash plants with the green winter squash came from. Melons, only one melon in sight, not the type of the seeds I planted. And looks like a honeydew. And to my knowledge, I've never had a honeydew that I even composted, so I don't know where the hell that came from. But that's how denial works. And relative to the human-animal bond, we're good at it. We're really good at it. Take spay and neuter. There was a time when I easily could have won the Golden Gonad Award for spaying and neutering any dog or cat that crossed my path. How could I do that? I have a degree in biology. I know that the entire body, all living things, evolved physiologically and behaviorally for one purpose, and that is to reproduce and pass your genes on. And I know that each one of us and each dog and cat represents thousands of parents, grandparents, previous generations who succeeded in doing exactly that. And yet I became part of the program that said, la-di-da, it doesn't make any difference if we take out their uteruses, all their reproductive organs, because what do they need them for? You know, all those sex hormones are responsible for is reproduction. In retrospect, it's mind-boggling to me. I mean, I'm a woman for Pete's sake. I've gone through puberty. I've gone through PMS. I know what it's like to look in a mirror one day and you're okay, and the next day you look in the mirror and you're ugly, and your hair is stringy, and you have zits, and you want to kill somebody. That is not behavior that is strictly related to popping babies out. That is affecting my whole body. And that, in reality, is true. We have both estrogen and testosterone, both sexes, receptors all over our bodies, in our minds, everywhere, everywhere. But we didn't want to see it. We just bought into this. We bought into it, and somebody slapped a motto on it. Responsible pet owners spay and neuter their pets. And so everybody who wanted to be responsible went out and spayed and neutered their pets. So we were in denial about it. And I still remember the day it hit me. You know, my God, what have we been doing? And for a while, it was pretty lonely out there, but now there are more and more articles showing up in the journals about the negative effects, and pretty soon we'll hit a tipping point. Another big area of denial in companion animals has to do with claws and teeth. A lot of people want to deny that dogs and cats communicate with their claws and teeth. And I'm sure if they thought about it, they would realize that this is ridiculous. I mean, they're not bipeds. They don't have the kind of larynx that we do that permits us to talk. They don't have an opposable thumb that enables them to write. So one of the ways they communicate is with their teeth and with their claws. And yet we don't want to know about that either. And that's what denial is. Now the good news about denial, as I learned from my squash, is that one day you can think that you have a garden full of melons, and the next day you don't. Next day, heck, next minute, you don't. And one day you can look at something like spay and neuter, and it makes absolutely perfectly good sense, and you're willing to die for it. And then the next minute, you put down an article, and you look at your dog or your cat, and you say, oh my God, how did I miss this? And the good news about denial is that it opens the door for miracles like that. And so because of that, I don't get depressed when I see things going on with dogs and cats and veterinary medicine and training that I don't or I may not agree with, but which have a tremendous following, because I know that in a twinkling of the eye, it can change. And the reason it can change is because seeing is not believing. Believing is seeing.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.